Kathleen here?
Yep.
Yeah, oh yeah, Kathleen's here.
Right at jewel time, you know that. Okay. I'm always late to the game, you know that too.
Hurry up your life.
Is the mayor here? I can't see everybody.
He was here, Tom.
He was here.
He just muted himself.
So, yeah. We just see the blob on the screen right now.
I think Dave is saying mayor is the blob.
I was thinking the same thing.
Barry.
Well, I guess I'm gonna start then, okay? Was that okay with everybody?
Yep.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming today. Debbie, if you call the roll for the safety committee meeting, it's Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020.
Narduzzi?
Here.
Capusta?
Here.
Walchanowicz?
Here.
I hope everybody voted already, because it took me about an hour and a half.
Yeah, I voted absentee.
Anybody missed it, so.
I don't think anybody missed it. I didn't know we had so many registered voters in Independence.
It didn't turn out last year.
No, it sure didn't. So I guess we'll jump right in here, Chief. So the recent, I don't know what you want to call it, hold up carjacking, whatever it is, on Rockside Road.
Yes.
What are we doing to assure the residents that, you know what, we're doing something, we'll try to make it not happen again? I guess just some kind of discussion on, you know, what we're doing, what our staffing is on Rockside Road. There's all kind of things flying around this town, you know, in Independence. So just want to get everything out in the open and hide nothing. So the floor is yours.
Yes. Okay. You know, unfortunately, crime and violent crime in particular is at unprecedented levels, not just regionally, but nationwide. You know, I was in a conference earlier today, Cleveland's homicides so far. Last year they had 106, I think, or 109 all year. They're at 146 already this year, and there's two full months left in the year. You know, that trend is the same with most crimes, and you know, none of us are spared. What we've done is we've been reactive as possible and proactive to a point too. And number one, information sharing, trying to find out how these folks are working, how they're doing the crimes, trying to head them off in the past. The good news is in our residential areas, it's been extremely successful. We were able to narrow down when those car burglaries were occurring and the attempted car thefts were occurring. And we were able to set up focus details using, you know, marked cars, unmarked cars, overlapping patrols. We would trade mutual aid back and forth with the surrounding cities to saturate areas. Over the past probably about 2 weeks, we've gotten in three pursuits with suspicious vehicles that we believe were getting ready to do that. And as soon as our guys went to practically stop, they took off. Since then, we have not had much activity of that nature at all. Our neighboring cities haven't been so lucky. Seven Hills, I believe, had three cars stolen the night before last, two last night, as well as several broken into. We did not have any reports over that same time period. So the residential initiative seems to be working. We're balancing that and using many of the same approaches to the Rockside corridor. I know, you know, we've had some hot spots with a couple of the hotels. We're concentrating our patrols on the hours that are identified doing that, and further to supplement our manpower, we reached agreements with Doubletree and with Topgolf that during those peak activity hours, they hire off-duty officers, and it's a manpower multiplier, because one of the things the mayor did prior to my being chief here was he authorized our officers to take a marked cruiser when they're working an off-duty job within the city. But the caveat to that is if there's an emergency, they're to leave the off-duty location to respond to the emergency. So basically what that does is it supplements our manpower without any cost to the city. And on the rare occasions one of those big events hits, we have extra resources, manpower to throw on it. That occurred during the carjacking. The first officer there, Officer Wadley, was there, I believe, in less than 2 minutes from when the call was dispatched. He was assigned to the Doubletree Hotel, so he made it there, you know, almost immediately. We are also utilizing our surveillance resources. Ryan Prosser just did a fantastic job with upgrading our surveillance camera on the Crown Center. The new camera is completely modern, updated, newest possible technology. It's got an incredible night vision and low light capability. It expands our reach to be able to look at this area and also to, you know, gather evidence and pinpoint responses. It helps our dispatchers and the responding officers because they can view the video of their cruisers. It helps coordinate responses to these issues.
Mr. Chairman, Chief, maybe Mr. Chairman, may I interject at this point?
Yes, Mayor.
Would it be possible that since the chief's talking about technology, he's done a lot of research on that, and he has a suggestion that could further complement our use of cameras. The chief, would it be appropriate time to talk about that since we're talking about technology?
If Mr. Narduzzi and his committee would like to take that right now, absolutely, I can talk about it.
Yeah, let's skip down to number four then.
Okay, I've evaluated, we have the automated license plate reader camera already that we obtained through a county grant. That's at 21 in Rockside. We've had tremendous success with that. We've solved burglaries. We've solved car thefts with it. We've managed to track suspects very successfully. We located stolen vehicles. I was looking to expand that network to cover the entire Rockside corridor. The vision I have would be to blanket the area with those ALPR cameras and make it impossible for anybody to get into or out of that area between 21 and the far side of I-77 West Creek area without being captured on camera. That's where the majority of our activity is happening down there. I looked at several different systems that are out there. The main thing is any system we look at has to be compatible with our existing system and also integrate with the county network, because we're able to track these vehicles anywhere they go in the county where these cameras are. I believe right now they've got 50 of the cameras set up in various municipalities around here. I met with a representative from a company out of Atlanta called Flock Public Safety. They're the industry leader in these ALPR cameras, and he came out and gave us a demonstration of their camera system. Mentor, Eastlake, Pepper Pike, and Hunting Valley have all, within the past month or so, signed contracts with Flock Public Safety. What they do is they install these cameras at the intersections. You lease them. With the ones we have now, if I wanted to add cameras using the system we got through the grant, we would have to purchase them, and they're pretty cost prohibitive. To do this area, the purchase price alone would be in the area of $250,000 to $300,000. And on top of that, you're gonna have to have electrical work and engineering done. What Flock does is they do all the installation. The only thing the city would be responsible for is making the electrical connection at the source. They'll run all the wiring. We just need to run a source, and I can consult with our service department and tech service to do that. They'll install them on city-owned light poles or city-owned light fixtures.
Now, Chief, if I might interject, didn't you, when I was talking with the gentleman, didn't they also say that as they upgrade technology and cameras, they replace them at their cost?
Absolutely. That's part of the lease. Thank you, Mayor. Part of the lease is when they come out with a newer software or a newer hardware, a better camera, a better resolution camera, they come out and swap it out. It doesn't cost us anything as long as we're under that lease. These cameras are smart cameras. They use the same sort of technology as facial recognition. So even if you don't have a license plate, you can query in there, hey, I want to see every ground viewing century that went through this intersection in the past 18 hours, and it will search and find that for you. We own the data, and they have permission from the county data warehouse now to integrate this with the existing county ALPR system. So anything that we search for, not just in the Rockside corridor, but query everything in Cuyahoga County. And they're also looking at expanding these networks into other parts of the state, so that will expand our reach to track these suspects.
And Chief, what was the percentage of reduction in crime based on these that you shared with us? You recall?
Hang on one second. I'm pulling that up in the literature here. I don't want to give you the wrong figures off the top of my head here. I think the biggest reductions that they saw was in Houston. And it was, they saw between a 35% and 55% reduction in theft offenses, and violent crime was down around 40-some percent. That was after the introduction of these cameras. They also saw a marked increase in arrests and recovery of stolen vehicles because of the intelligence gathered from these things. It's a force multiplier. It's like having a cop on the street corner 24/7 because they're gathering and recording all that data. You can also access it in real time and look at it as it's going on.
So if a stolen car or somebody with a felony comes into our city, within 15 seconds, I believe they said that information is sent to us.
Yes, they're connected to the National Crime Information Center, the NCIC, and that's where every warrant, every stolen car, every wanted person is entered into NCIC. You can, on your computer and your cruiser, open up the software and you can set the alerts. So if I want to sit down on Rockside and set my computer to alert me anytime a stolen car or wanted person or somebody under suspension comes through that camera, it'll trigger me an alert and give me a picture of the car. It'll say, hey, it's a black Ford. Pull over the black Ford and see if we're recovering a stolen car. We've been using this system on our camera at Rockside with the alerts, and several of our guys have had some great hits with it. This would expand it. And the big thing with this is getting those vehicles that are coming and going from the hotels that are identified as the trouble spots. What we're looking at, we did a study down there to completely blanket a Rockside corridor and make sure there are no holes in our coverage or no avenues to come and go without getting caught. The only thing off of Rockside where I would like to put cameras is where Rockside Woods, the new part of Rockside Woods, is going to come out on 21. That'll cover the back door there for people that are coming up that way to get to Rockside. For 23 total cameras it would take to cover all those intersections, the annual lease cost would be $57,500. There's a one-time installation fee of $250 a camera, but they are waiving that fee for orders that are placed in this area as an introduction to get their foot in the door.
That's the same price that that's similar to what several communities on the east side just approved.
Absolutely.
So what we're asking, what we'd like to do for next week is ask council if they would entertain us putting this on the agenda for next week, and so we can get this tool on board immediately.
How quickly is the turnaround on that, Chief?
Right now, he's saying they're talking about anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks to get the system installed. I've got a call into Chief Cannon in Hunting Valley. His council just approved it last week. So I want real time from him as to how close they are to those estimates, and he's going to keep me apprised of that. Also, Mr. Lombardo, the regional rep, said he's more than willing to come to council and give you a presentation. He's got an entire PowerPoint and live video presentation that shows all the capabilities of the system.
And this lease, Chief, goes on an annual basis, or is it a commitment of a certain number of years?
It would be a two-year commitment at that annual cost for 2 years. And we're locked into that price. Everything's covered. And at the end of 2 years, then obviously you would negotiate a new lease. But I believe Texas is where they've been doing business the most, Texas and Georgia. And he said they haven't had any annual increases in 4 years.
So is there any additional cost for the computers that are in the cars, or any kind of programs we have to buy or anything?
No, that's one of the attractive things about this. It's a web-based system. It's just like the camera that Ryan just put on the Crown Center. There's a website that the guys log into, and it's right that they don't have, there's no software purchase or anything of that. It's all completely web-based. And part of the contract is the data storage. They store our data in their cloud, and we authorize them to move it from their cloud to the county computer. So we don't have to have any servers or storage on site, and hopefully it will, you know, minimize or eliminate any potential IT, you know, issues, because Ryan's got a pretty full plate already.
Steve, did you ask, like, if we have a camera that goes down or something, what is their turnaround to get out to fix it or replace it?
If it's a software issue, they can do it remote. It's a 30-minute response time. If it's an actual camera that needs replacement or a hardware or equipment issue, it's a 24 to 48 hour. They have a local contractor who's under contract that does their local repairs.
Okay.
Very similar to calling signal service for a traffic light. They come out right away.
Okay. And also, these cameras, you know, a lot of these cars now, you know, they have dark covers over their license plates and stuff because they try to figure, oh, if I have these covers, they can't scan me for speed or this. Can those cameras penetrate?
They do have high resolution to penetrate, but if it's basically, if you can't see it with the naked eye, you're not going to be able to pick it up with the camera, but it can read and identify the make, model, and year of the car.
Okay.
So even if you don't get a plate, you can narrow it down, and to be honest with you, that's how we caught, a few years back, right after we got the camera at 21 in Rockside, we had a burglary on Lafayette, and one of the neighbors our detectives talked to described a suspicious truck. They were able to give us a make and model and describe a ladder rack on it just from that description. We queried the system, it gave us a bunch of possibles, and we were able to nab one that was also popped on a camera in Lakewood almost immediately after a burglary there. We ended up identifying and arresting the suspect in a couple of days.
Chief, what's the name of this company again that provides these cameras?
It's called Flock Public Safety. They're out of Atlanta.
Flock, F-L-O-C-K?
F-L-O-C-K.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, you seem very excited about it, and your excitement leads me to believe that you certainly feel this is a good tool for our city to have, and based on that, I would definitely support having the legislation brought to us next week.
I appreciate that. Cameras are, you know, one of the most effective tools. Again, there's no perfect silver bullet that's going to solve all crimes, but we've had such great success with the one camera we were able, or the one intersection we were able to get camera. I think especially with the rise of activity on Rockside, if we couple this with an increased police presence down there, we're going to make a very serious dent. If nothing else, I want to send a message, not here, go somewhere else and do your nonsense.
Well, you know, also, I think, you know, by going this route as a start, you know, it's going to show the residents that we are putting forth you and the mayor are putting forth every effort possible to keep our city safe. Because 90% of that stuff's coming in and out in Rockside. So I think that's a great idea. I support that 110%.
Thank you.
Chief, what was the result of that incident there at the Winking Lizard? You said there's 2-minute response thing. Have they gotten the car back? Have they apprehended any kind of suspect?
We recovered the car within half an hour. We were able to track it with OnStar. It was a GM vehicle, and OnStar has a law enforcement liaison that we can contact. They deal strictly with these sort of things. Once we were able to verify that, you know, we were a legitimate police department, they, you know, do their due diligence. Not only were they able to locate the car, but they have the capability of shutting the car down. Now, they don't do it while the car is moving because that would create a safety hazard, but the next time that car stops, they shut down the ignition and lock it out so it can't be restarted, and the bad guys abandon the car. We recovered it down in the East 115th and Harvard area. Our detectives were able to process it. They pulled one good palm print and some fingerprints, and we believe we got some good touch DNA. We're currently waiting on return from the state BCI crime lab for any results.
Very good. And then, is it possible, I don't know if Dale's still here, but we've asked for, you used to provide us weekly figures, you know, in the previous, you know, when we got our mayor's report and everything. Would it be possible to have, like, a comparison over the last few years, see if there's a trend or what the trend, I know we know it's been going up, but I like to see actual numbers to kind of, for us to be able to see that, see that trend and everything.
Yeah, the thought was, Vice Mayor, that the chief would put the numbers together with also a brief narrative so that you can discern or differentiate with some of those numbers. So it's just
very good.
So he intends to do that with a short narrative so that you can see that, just like the fire department, et cetera. So that's
very
goal.
Good. Yeah, because with social media now, is, you know, the numbers could be maybe just a little bit higher, but because of these high-profile events, you know, it seems like there's a wave that's, you know, that everybody's unsafe in their homes and everything. You'd like to have actual figures that we'll be able to discuss and examine the situation even better.
And we don't want to mislead the public either, Dave, too. So I agree.
Oh, no.
Any kind of figure that we can have that's black and white and not gray would be a benefit for us. So I was with a group of people Saturday night for Halloween, and, you know, they said the incidents on Rockside are just totally unacceptable. They have children that used to go to, you know, different places to eat after a football game or basketball game. And they won't even let their kids on Rockside Road after dark now. So I think because of social media, these things get out of hand. And if we had hard figures that would, show the public that, listen, it's happening everywhere. Independence is no better off than anybody else, but here's what we're doing to confront the situation. And you know, hopefully bring some of these things to ease. Because people are very upset in Independence over, you know, two or three incidents that maybe shouldn't have happened, but I don't know. They happened, and now we got to deal with it. But I think we need to step up whatever we're going to do down there.
Mr. Chairman, that leads into the next. I thank council, and we'll prepare legislation for this if that's what the members of council would like us to do. Is that what I heard?
Yes.
Yes. It's a yes. Mr. Chairman,
can you take one question? Go ahead, Councilman Sinek.
Thank you. I apologize for my late arrival here. A couple things go through my head, but first, this is not a minor thing, and I always believe two readings of this stuff is better than just rushing it through in one council meeting. So this problem didn't arise overnight. It's not going to get solved overnight. And, you know, slow and right's better than fast and wrong in my book. So I would just advise slow and steady. Put it on two readings, give people, and maybe there's other contractors out there who have an interest in this. We're just jumping very quickly to a solution here that slow and right, just take a deep breath. Maybe it's better to just let it work its way through the process. But hey, Chief, maybe address this before I got on, and I apologize if you did. But some of this stuff is kind of Big Brother is watching sort of thing to me, and I'm no constitutional scholar or lawyer, but is this not getting onto the fringes of improper search and seizure, you know, constitutional invasion? I mean, there's people doing this, so I imagine they built a business around it. Somebody's sort of vetted that out, but I don't know. So can you speak to the constitutionality of some of this stuff?
Absolutely, Mr. Sinek. And that's a very common concern that a lot of people have. You have to remember, these cameras are scanning vehicles and license plates that are being publicly operated on a public roadway. The Supreme Court has come down very solidly and said that is not, there's no expectation of privacy there. We're gathering information that's already out in the public, it's already out in the open. So it's not an unreasonable search. There's no Fourth Amendment concerns. I know originally LSAG, the company that did our first cameras that we had at Rockside in 21 and Flock Public Safety, have done extensive legal research, and there's no record of any of them, of any city or any municipality ever facing any action because of these cameras. And again, it's out there that, that the license plates and the vehicles, as long as they're operated where you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, such as an open roadway, there's no Fourth Amendment concern.
Very good, thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Councilman said a couple of things. First of all, before you got on, the chief did suggest that He looked at several different potential operating companies, so to speak, since we're leasing this equipment. And second of all, it's actually the residents think we're going too slow in many respects in responding to some of these. So I understand there's a fine line, but I think if you'd consider that, I'd appreciate it. I think the city would appreciate it in this case, because in some cases they think we're going too slow.
And Mr. Sinek, to echo the mayor's sentiments there, one of the responsibilities he holds me to, and that I hold myself to, is to be a responsible steward of the city's funds. And part of that is to make sure I do my homework before I come to the mayor or I come to council with some of these proposals. A lot of that is too, you know, much of this work's already been done. These cameras have been up and functioning and, you know, been effective in other municipalities, some far larger than ours. Atlanta has had the most success with them. They started in their most crime-ridden precinct, and they did a beta test for the company using it and immediately implemented them citywide. You know, so again, I wouldn't bring something to the mayor, and I certainly wouldn't ask him to advocate something to council if I didn't believe it was in the best interest of the city and it was the most, you know, cost-effective way to get the job done that we need to get done.
Chairman?
Yes, Dale.
Question. I know I've gone into some communities, and when you go into the community, they have signage that says that you're being monitored by cameras. Has it been proven that that's any positive deterrent to have some signage as you come into Brexville Road, Rockside, any of those areas?
So I don't know the legal aspect of it, but I can tell you this much, that we just had a security system put in our home. And with that security system, I had cameras put on the outside of the house. They gave me stickers that I have to post outside my home to say that they are being filmed in order for me to use that in a court of law. If that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what they told me. So getting back to the chief, I would ask him that, are we going to have some kind of notification somewhere saying that you are being monitored via, you know, cameras?
The only legal requirement that I'm aware of for notification is if you're using cameras for traffic enforcement, either for speed enforcement or for red light enforcement, you are required to post signs saying traffic laws enforced by video or by photo. Other than that, just to have the LPR cameras, there's no posting requirement for...
And along with that, the chief, once we post those signs, I've seen them, they think you're running radar.
Yeah.
I think you're taking pictures of, for traffic enforcement in terms of monitoring speed, et cetera. And I don't want to send that message.
No, me neither. I've never been an advocate of the automated photo enforcement. And, you know, I really don't believe it enhances public safety. And I echo the mayor's concerns. I would not want to, you know, inadvertently give that impression to the public.
Unless council wants us to put up speed cameras.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Mayor. Go do that.
The Mayor Kurtz cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, no, thank you.
Tom, that's Jimmy, like, reminds me of Councilwoman Gazinski with no more senior plowing, right?
Councilman Trakas, go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to expound upon that, so two quick things. I think it's prudent if we could see all the bids that were, that you solicited, Chief, just so we could see what the difference in philosophy was and you know, why you chose this system. I think that's important from a cost perspective. And, you know, again, I think from a competitive bidding perspective, we need to see that. That's important to find out that there were bids and what they were. Secondly, I think it's important to have signs. I think what Tom said, not just from a legal liability perspective, but you want to discourage people. You want to be known as the place where if you're trying to commit a crime, we're going to catch you up front. You know, we're going to get you quickly. I think we want to be known as that. We're not trying to get traffic scofflaws. We're trying to prevent people from, breaking and entering. We're trying to prevent people from stealing cars. We're trying to prevent property and damage to individuals. I think getting that word out is actually really important. So the more publicity we can get that we're doing this, the better off we are. I think that really sends a good message. Chief, I think you've been sending cars through the neighborhoods a little bit more of late, and that's noticeable. You know, people talk about it, they feel safer. So I think it's the same thing here. You know, if we're going to expend this kind of money to keep public safety and to give more tools to you, I think it's important that we tell the world about it, because, you know, that's the first thing the criminals want to do is find out where there's the least enforcement, right? So if they can be on camera from the second they enter town and we're following them around, and if they're particularly in a stolen vehicle, by gum, we want to tell people about that, I think. I mean, what's your reaction to that?
You know, I think it's a fine line. Again, a lot of people, all they'll see is the word camera, and they're automatically going to jump to the conclusion that, you know, we're Lyndale. We're going to be sending them tickets in the mail. And that's not the impression that I want to give to the public. I think when we enforce this, and what happens is when we get a great example of this is the prostitution details when we run them at the hotels. We just ran one a couple weeks ago along with the Sheriff's Department and the Ohio Department of Public Safety. The Sheriff's Department intel folks shared with us they have a website where they monitor traffic for these people that solicit prostitutes. And one of the recurring themes we saw there, which I absolutely love to see, was these people that were out looking for prostitutes or sharing information. One of the recurring themes was, don't go to Independence, you'll get arrested. That's the message I want to send out there.
And you know,
I think we get there by that high visibility enforcement. I want it to be, if one of these knuckleheads gets off of 77 with ill intent, I want them to see two or three cruisers and figure that's too hot, maybe I'll go somewhere else.
And video evidence is more effective than warning.
Okay,
warning signs.
Can I have your address again?
You do both, though. I mean, don't you do both?
I think we start with the one,
okay,
and then see how we integrate the other. I'll leave it to the chief to really to determine that.
Tommy, is there, can I ask a question?
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it for years. You know, 20 years ago, you know, when people were afraid to drive through Independence. You know, they feared us, they feared the Mayor Kurtz and...
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute.
All right.
You know, they didn't want to drive through town. Convicts, speeders, nothing. You know, we hear it. We were safe and strong and everything, and I think we're going to be in the route of going back that way.
I will give him this message.
It's just you protecting us the way we all need to be protected.
Sure, give me your phone number, please.
Secondly, with some of those businesses on Rockside...
Okay. I will have them return your phone
there. We know how dark the parking lot is over
there. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Next to Slimans, that side parking lot is really dark. Is there anything that we can do with these property owners or business owners to enforce them to better light their parking lots to deter stuff like this from happening? Because if you have big bright lights behind the Winking Lizard, you know, maybe this kind of stuff isn't going to happen. Is there any kind of avenue that, you know, we can take to try to enforce that and let them handle some, you know, responsibility for safety of their patrons?
I think that's important. We can look at that. We should review that and see if there's an opportunity to have them support us in our effort. We'll look at that. That's interesting.
In conjunction with that, and I know we can't tell people what to do on their private property, but I really think sometimes we have people who still think we're living in this impenetrable bubble, and so they don't think about getting security systems or getting security systems that are hooked into the station so that it just doesn't ring in there around their home and their neighbor goes, oh, somebody's car alarm is going off again and lets it go. I just think at some point in time it might behoove us, Chief, if coming from you there could be some communication to our residents, just kind of reminding them that another layer of protection beyond what the city provides is what they could and should possibly be doing on their own with something like a home security system. Because as I talk to my friends and neighbors, and we've had ours since we built our home back in 86. But to this day, I could probably tell you that I have more friends and neighbors who don't have a system than do. And I know we can't force them, but I just think it's good to reinforce the concept.
And I think, too, we've made some great improvements with our information dissemination. You know, when we had that last rash of car burglaries, I mean, that same day, the mayor had a swift reach out there. We collaborated, we got a message together, and we informed the public, hey, this is what you do to avoid being a victim of these. And I've heard a lot of feedback. That communication resonated with a lot of our residents. And not only that, it started spreading from, hey, did you hear the swift? No, what did he say? Well, he said, we shouldn't do this and that. Oh, I'm going to take my purse out of my car. I'm going to take the keys in with me. You know, and I think that, along with, you know, our increased visibility and our hitting the neighborhoods, you know, strategically at times, is what has made those crimes curtail here where other cities are still getting decimated with them.
That's good. Great.
Okay, thanks, Chief. I'm going to keep moving on here, so I'm just going to hit...
Mr. Chairman, one more. Sorry.
Go ahead, Vern.
If you got it for the Chief. Chief, you mentioned Hunting Valley in this quote, and I guess there's a couple other communities, Northeast Ohio, doing the LPRs. But to me, Hunting Valley, one, it's a village. Two, it's a 100% residential community without a single commercial enterprise. I don't know if they have any state routes there, definitely no freeways. And that community is getting 25 LPRs. Is 23 for Independence enough to adequately cover the city the way I look at Hunting Valley, and they're getting 25, and we have so much more commercial business activity, so much more daytime population, freeways, major roadways, and we're getting 23. I just want to know, is that enough, or is this just a start, and maybe there's more to come?
I would look at it, this is just a start. I think we use this as a tool and use it, you know, to expand on the success we've had with our single intersection. We expanded there, and ideally, as we move down the road, the next area would be the Pleasant Valley Corridor. And then maybe we expand it on to 21. We look at it to make sure we're getting a return on our investment first. I'm absolutely convinced that the Rockside Corridor needs this. The activity, the business, that's where all our crime-fighting business is occurring right now. Again, maybe we expand in other areas, maybe not as intensely, you know, maybe spread them out a little bit further. But I think this is a good... Now, Hunting Valley, they're pretty much blanketing the whole village with those 25 cameras. They've got, you know, South Center Road and Shaker Boulevard is the main intersection there. And they're trying to catch entries to all their neighborhoods and make sure that, you know, nobody's going to be able to get into, you know, one of their developments without driving through one of these cameras and getting identified. That's the same approach we're taking with our problem area. But there's nothing that says if it works there, we don't expand it on a larger scale.
I think that in concert with, we're already talking about Rockside Woods North and Brecksville Road. And the other area we need to focus on is the Cloverleaf. We've had some trucks stolen, catalytic converter stolen, and so if we get them to come into town, we should be able to monitor them. So that'll probably be the next extension area that we're going to look at.
All right, so I'm going to move on to number two, and while we're talking about safety personnel and discussion, I guess I want to ask the chief one question before we get to number two. Do we have a specific number of police patrolling Rockside Road on the weekends, say Monday or Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night? Or is it just a free-for-all? They just kind of cruising around the town? I've been asked that question. I don't know the answer.
One of the duties of each patrol shift sergeant is to make those assignments. For instance, I was in Saturday night to help with trick-or-treating, and I sat in on Sergeant Martin's shift briefing before the night shift went out. And he will assign the officers saying, okay, between these hours, these two units are Rockside and Quarry. These two units are Rockside and 21. But then, you know, we shift one of those units into the residential developments at a certain hour when we, you know, would see the uptick. And it depends on the day or week and time of day. We look at these calls to see what days are they occurring and, you know, what the locations are. And that's how we determine where to use that manpower. And then if something big occurs, we have those guys working the off-duty jobs that we pull into the fray as well. But yeah, there's definitely, our sergeants are responsible for making sure they're assigning the officers to where the proportional need may well be. But again, that's not to say that something bad might not occur somewhere else in the city that's going to pull us away from that, because, you know, unfortunately there is some crime that's unpredictable. We're trying to use the intelligence we have to narrow down where we need to concentrate our resources.
So is there a definite number that's out there on the weekends for the city, say from 8 o'clock till, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Generally we're going to have 4 or 5 officers assigned to work, and then, you know, depending on how many other officers are working in the city, it's going to be anywhere between 4 and as many as 12 if, you know, several are working at the hotels and Topgolf and stuff.
And those 4 to 5, they're on the road, or 3 of them are on the road and 2 of them are sitting at the police station?
No, everybody in the patrol division who's working, their primary job is to patrol the road. But if they arrest somebody, you got to take them back to the station and book them. If we've got a prisoner in jail overnight, you got to come back and check on them every hour. So, you know, there's things that are going to pull them off the road. If somebody comes up on the station to make a report, they'll have to come back and meet that person there and sit down and take the report. If they've got to process evidence or complete paperwork, you know, those are things that would take them off the road, but their primary focus is to be out there on the road.
Okay, that was just a sidetrack to number two, so I guess we get back on schedule here, but... safety personnel, discussion of current and future staffing. I know we had talked years ago about the drop program that, you know, that may be coming up for, you know, a number of people. We don't really know, do we?
No, unfortunately, under the Ohio Revised Code, pension status is confidential. You know, the employees can voluntarily tell us, but we can't require them to tell us if they're in drop or when they're going to retire, what their retirement date's going to be. But you can also look at the hire dates and do the math and figure out when the maximum time would be there and the minimum time, and get a range of when you can anticipate retirements. Right now, we've got about a third of our department that are in that retirement range. We've got 10 officers that are retirement eligible, that have sufficient time in service that could say, you know, I'm done. One of them for sure has informed me that he intends on retiring in May, one of our patrolmen. You know, I anticipate 2 to 3 others will go within the next 12 months. Okay, you know, we're anticipating those needs. I've been working with the mayor. We're vetting candidates now to make conditional offers to, and to try to bolster the manpower. But we're not going to just hire anybody to get a warm body in. They have to be a good fit for the organization. They have to possess the right mindset, the necessary skill set. You know, they have to be the type of police officer that our residents deserve, not just somebody that's going to be a warm body to fill a slot.
Tom, I have a question.
Yes, Dale, go ahead.
Chief, I had, in a conversation with you before, I had indicated that a couple of different times we ended up with multiple officers going down Rexall Road, I assume toward Rockside, at the same time, and we talked about the possibility of it being a shift change, and at that particular time there would be a number of officers at the same place. I know the service department tweaked the hours of the shifts. Is there any thought to overlapping the shifts in some way that you would have continuous coverage?
We do. We have either one or two officers that comes in an hour early and leaves an hour early. So during that hour shift change, there's a presence on the road. But again, if it's just one officer that's there covering that shift change and they're tied up, you have to pull other officers from shift briefing to respond to calls that come in around that time.
Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Dale. Okay, we'll move on to number three, facilities research and development, upgrades to a 40-year-old existing facility. And the number one question, discussion of the safety force for Rockside Road. So I know the mayor had campaigned on the safety force on Rockside Road, and I hear it from a group of people out there in Independence asking, you know, when's that coming? So I think seeing something on Rockside Road more than just cameras is a good deterrent. I'd like to see more cars on Rockside Road. So, Mayor, if you could, if you could give us an update on that safety force facility on Rockside Road.
Well, it's in concert. There's two components of that. There's the existing, almost, it'll be 40-year-old facility that the police department works out of today. And then there's the discussion of a remote facility in the Rockside Road area. I show you this compiled information that the chief put together relative to our existing manpower. We asked them to put their thoughts and ideas, because they're the people that have to work in this area. They have to work in the existing facility. We're going to further refine that. We're going back with a second request with our personnel, our police department personnel, to further refine their, we had some really good ideas that they proposed, but it's a two-pronged approach. There's the existing facility and what steps we have to take to, and it's consistent with our GPD study, what steps we're going to take to internally make the facility more effective, more user-friendly for all the personnel within the department. And also, we are going to explore, and we will come to council with the, after we do some RFP, defining where to locate, what the needs are, how we're going to incorporate that into a more strategic initiative with respect to safety and future safety. So what I wanted to do today was just bring council up to speed in terms of our goals. So we're using the two-prong approach. One is our existing facility and what we have to do to modernize, upgrade. Brecksville built a new facility, for example. What steps we need to take to give our department personnel the best in technology, the best in terms of utilization of a facility. The second prong is the remote facility on Rockside Road in the Rockside Road area, and bringing somebody on board to determine the potential locations, the size of a facility, incorporating the expectations of the department personnel, and then be able to present something to council comprehensively so that you could then make and pick and choose what you want to do long term.
And is this underway, this process?
Well, yeah, the fact that I just showed you the first wave of information we received internally, my thought was, I want every stakeholder in the department to have a voice in it. We're going to do the same thing with the fire department. and we're going to ask them to, they live and work in these environments, so they should be able to give us boots on the ground information that would make their job better with the changing in the environment that we've experienced over the last, it'll be 40 years. The chief can attest to the fact, maybe chief, you want to elaborate on the, some of the changes in safety protocols, technology that a facility today would be designed maybe differently, and things we could do with our existing facility that would make it better for our personnel, and then we'll focus on that initially.
So some of the concerns for a police facility, and again, these were concerns 30 some years ago when the current facility was constructed, but technology has increased considerably. There's areas at our station that, you know, we have problems getting radio signals in and out on a high band radio signal, and there's, you know, we were able to retrofit some fixes for that. But also some of the concerns is a secured parking area for staff instead of an open parking area, because in this day and age, unfortunately, you know, there's some folks out there that aren't too fond of cops and police cars. And we've seen, you know, vandalism and arson occur to police vehicles. We would like to expand and have a dedicated training facility to conduct our in-house training. I'm a big proponent of doing as much of our training possible in our own house, training our officers to be the training and doing it there. Expanded indoor storage, vehicle storage capability. We do a lot of evidence processing. We're seeing a lot of vehicle-related crimes where we need the indoor area to be able to process these vehicles. We're getting a more diverse workforce. Female cops weren't as prevalent, you know, back in the 1980s as they are now. So we would definitely need to retrofit with an expanded female locker room facility. Many of the, you know, technology issues, the computers, the record storage, the evidence storage, they've all been modernized. There are better ways to do it. There's more effective ways to do it. There's ways to harness technology. There's nothing wrong with the way we did it. It was state of the art when we, you know, initially designed this facility, but, and we've done a really good job of, you know, keeping up with the changes as best we can, but there's definitely some large opportunities to upgrade the facility to meet not just the current needs, but also for the next 40 years, looking into the future.
So from what I'm gathering, I mean, this is not going to happen overnight. This is going to be a long-term, drawn-out process. And I don't know if that's what Independence residents are looking for. I mean, they're looking for some kind of action now. I mean, Rockside Road's not getting any better. And I think that we need to show some kind of some force, or, you know, at least people can see that we're doing something on Rockside Road. I know the cameras are going to be a great help, but I don't know if that's a total deterrent from what, you know, that what I would like to see down there. I mean, if this is going to be a long, drawn-out process, maybe we look at renting a facility that's available on Rockside Road and throwing a station in there for a small amount of money just to have, you know, a spot there, like they used to have at Parmentown Mall. They had a police station inside the mall.
Well, a couple things, Mr. Chairman, a couple things. First of all, it is this is a marathon, not a sprint. On the other hand, we also are, we're nailing down several potential sites. And I'd hate to elaborate on those today because it might take an advantage away in our negotiations.
I hear you.
And take some options away. So we're kind of like between a rock and a hard place with our delivery of the message. But I can assure you that we are taking steps both internally to get our personnel involved, and we're also taking steps to define the parameters for something on Rockside Road in that area that'll further solidify the safety and security of not only the residents, but also the people that come in and out of our community and those that travel through our community. So for response time, et cetera. So I just think I would hesitate to go in more in detail at this point. If we call another meeting next month, we can shake the tree and see what additional information we can make public and show the population and our residents and our business population that we are taking steps that are going to be more comprehensive than just a Band-Aid.
Well, there's not really a problem with our response time to these issues, is there, Chief? I mean, you said 2 minutes to incident the winking lizard. And I know that our fire chief, I think Stephen mentioned that we got even a better rating, that their response time, the fire department, has improved over the past few years, too. So is response time a problem?
No, response time is definitely not a problem. We're lucky to have one of the best response times in the state for law enforcement on Category 1, the emergency violent calls. However, that's only part of the equation. I think councilperson usually hit the nail on the head. Visibility is a big part of it as well. I think that's one of the prongs of our approach to it now, is why we're concentrating these areas at those times. Because, you know, when the bad guys are there, that's why we want to have the biggest show of the flag and see as many marked cruisers in the area saturated as possible.
So it's really a manpower issue.
Permanent presence down there will only enhance that.
The other thing is that there is a safety component of Rexville Road, too. Our response team is good, but how dangerous is it at times going through center of town? So we have that. Balance that component. We're looking at several different options with respect to Rexville Road and safety through the center of town. But I think the chief said it best: visibility, response time, and also, I don't want to cloud the issue to think that people think that police are just purely out to law enforcement. They're there to serve, in a variety of ways, and we're not just. It's not always punitive. It's more. You know, if safety is also helping somebody with a disabled vehicle, it's helping someone that's disabled. And so we perform a variety of tasks on a daily basis that you don't hear about because it's not criminal or crime related, but it is part of our function in terms of delivery of service.
I agree 100%, Mayor. The other day I was driving on 480 and I seen, I think it was Brooklyn Heights patrolman changing a tire for a woman, and I thought, wow, I haven't seen that in a long, long time. So, but
well,
that's a great thing to see.
Well, with all due respect, there's a good one for you. Our female policewoman helped change a tire on Pleasant Valley Road last weekend. I got a call thanking Chief. I forgot to tell you about this one, but Autumn, she helped a citizen change a tire, and. They were very much appreciative, not only the safety, but the fact that they jumped right in to help. So we do have our people do a lot of that that goes unnoticed, but it is very much appreciated. But so safety is comprehensive. It's not just punitive in nature. It's all about customer service, too. So suffice to say, Mr. Chairman, that I think with council support, the heavy lifting is going to be when we have to spend money. And we have to make that commitment. What we're trying to do is examine every possibility so that we can present to Safety Committee and Council a strategy that you can embrace, knowing that it's a long-term commitment and that we're trying to be as complete as possible in this analysis rather than rush into something. But the heavy lifting will be when we ask for the money to construct or to rehab and make sure that our safety forces are given the best opportunity to perform their jobs to the highest standards.
To reflect, though, on what Vice Mayor Grindel said about the number of police officers, and then to add to what you're saying, Mayor, regarding that police is the role of our police extends far beyond just the catching the criminal role. I think, again, too, the two really, to me, still speak to increasing volume of police officers. Because if we're saying that's what we believe is one of the deterrents, and we're also saying we'd like to see a continuation of the roles far beyond what the normal role of the police officers is considered, I think that says extra manpower.
You are, and I, Councilwoman Capusta, you're everyone's right. You're all right. But and then the future training, the next phase of police protection is who's the first one on a scene of an accident? It's the policeman. And I see the police being a conduit to the fire paramedics, in that we'll be in a better position with technology and communication and training to where the first people on the scene, the police officers, will be in a position to offer assistance and also be able to prepare the paramedics, the full paramedics, for their service. So it's a great opportunity if we include all the different aspects of training and size and number of people, etc.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Dale.
I think it's especially important to make our residents aware, number one, of the level of technology that we have. And obviously, possibly a meeting or two now from now, the increase in the level of technology and what it provides as far as abilities to stop crime before it happens. Also, to make sure that residents are aware of the amount of time and the amount of personnel that we have in place on Rockside Road to make that area a safe place. I think, unfortunately, when people are getting their best information on Facebook about what they think is going on, rather than in the Independence Post or any other source that the city has to be able to present true status of the efforts that are being made by your committee and by the mayor and by this city to make sure that the community is safe. I think that when we talk about safety, the first key issue, of course, is manpower. And I know that we're a couple of officers short of where we should be. Chief, is that not correct?
We do have a couple vacancies. We've also got a couple officers that are out on long-term injury leave. We don't know exactly when they're going to come back. Councilwoman Capusta said it, you know, manpower issues. I don't think you'll ever find a police chief that'll say, oh, no, I don't need any more cops. Definitely that's one of the issues that, you know, we've been working on.
Right. Well, and that to me is one of the key issues is, what can we do to make sure that we have the police department staffed at the levels that we've approved to make sure we have those people in place? That's number one. And then obviously item number two would be the use of the technology that we already have in place and would be adding to. Definitely see that as being those two key pegs at making people feel safe and secure.
Well, in addition to that, Councilman Navarca, victims of crime and the residents, they really want the city to prevent crime. And so that's really the goal, is to work towards preventing it. And again, Chief said earlier, we're looking at hiring more people. But like he said, he wants the highest caliber person that he can find. We're not just going to take just anybody.
I'd like to give kudos to the mayor again for that reverse 911 call, just telling everybody about the incident. And get it out there, get the facts to them, and let them know exactly what happened, because that story changes by the minute on Facebook or on any kind of social media. So I agree with what the mayor did. I still say the council should be updated quicker than we do for incidences like that, because I heard this from a neighbor down the street who heard it at McDonald's. So, you know, and I get that email at 6:30 in the morning, and I know nothing about it. So I don't know if you guys could work that out somehow so we could get information up front so we don't start the spread of some false information rather than getting it right from the horse's mouth.
That's fair. I think that's fair.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Quick question for the chief along these lines. So it may be a while before we're able to get our facilities worked out. What is the role of unmanned vehicles in our police strategy? I know the fire department has them for search and rescue and trying to locate where the hot points are. But do we use unmanned vehicles for police surveillance?
Yes, we do. Through Southwest Enforcement Bureau, SEB, one of the benefits of that collaboration is we have two surveillance drones that are available to us. They're located in Parma. 24/7 they're available with a trained operator. One of them has infrared, FLIR, forward-looking infrared capability for nighttime searches, and it uses thermal imaging to find folks hiding in the woods. That's available to us. We've used them before. And again, the Crown Center camera, especially the new one, has many of those same capabilities. The biggest thing we use it for is traffic. If we have an accident, especially the way our intersection is with the two major interstates, traffic is a big concern. Being able to get eyes on the big picture of traffic and establish detours right away helps alleviate a lot of those problems. But we have the fixed camera now that we use to that great effect for that. And we also have the drone that's available that we've used on numerous occasions.
Yeah, the reason I ask is I thought maybe to Councilperson Walchanowicz's point about, you know, dark parking lots and that type of thing, if we did kind of randomly use the unmanned vehicle in those types of areas where it was visible and people saw that it was said police, you know, I think the word would get out pretty quickly to be proactive and not try to rip off cars. So I guess that was kind of one of the thoughts behind that. I don't know if that's a strategy that you'd want to consider employing, but I think word of mouth is everything. It's what we were talking about earlier. It's like, hey, you don't want to come here and commit a crime. And I think that's still the case. We just have a lot of new businesses and you know, not a lot of new criminals. And they say, well, you know, you got to go where the opportunity is. And so everything we can do to push that away, to visibly push that away, it's like having a policeman on a corner. You know, by having unmanned vehicles that we know are police going all through the business district, I think that's the type of thing to supplement the cameras that you're referring to and our headcount and our building. I think that would really, you know, go a long way to diminish crime.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Councilman Drake and members of council in that two things. The chief needs to relay information as soon as possible when there's a situation that takes place, and we'll do that in the future. Second of all, we're going to have the our people looking at some of these parking lots, and I think the restaurants, some of these business owners, need to be made aware that they have a responsibility to illuminate, make safe their parking lots, and so I think the city should bring it to their attention, and then they should respond accordingly. So those are some of the steps we're going to take.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't want to start cutting people short, but I don't want to run into Dave's meeting either. It is election night.
There is no meeting after this.
There's no meeting, Tom, so it's your...
We got all night then.
No.
Tommy, I got one more comment. Is that all right?
I have a few. Go ahead, sir.
I think what a lot of people have to take into consideration is the city has spent millions of dollars on the downtown, and we want to turn that into a walkabout downtown where people can walk to the downtown and walk to the stores. And to me and the people that I've talked to, the biggest concern is the fire department and the police department flying through the downtown having to get to Rockside. You know, if we, you know, down the road, we have hundreds of people walking the downtown. The last thing I want to see is a patrol car doing 60 or 70 to get to Rockside. So I think that's got to be one of the bigger pictures of why we want to have that satellite station down there, just to keep that new developed downtown safe from any type of tragedy from that. Does that make sense?
I agree with you, Chris, because, you know, I live on the south side, closer to Rockside, and I don't know. If there's more calls going to the south, then we got a lot of calls because, I mean, on an average, 6-7 times a day, that ambulance, fire truck, and police cars are flying by Lafayette Boulevard. And it's all hours of the day and all hours of the night. So, I would love to see something closer to Rockside Road or on Rockside Road to eliminate that future problem. Because sooner or later, it's going to happen.
I know the mayor, you know, he tried with that emergency ramp by the service department. ODOT wants nothing to do with it. So, I mean, what other options do we have?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't given up on that. We were rejected for about the fourth or fifth time, but I'm still going to pursue that as a strategy. And I truly believe it's in our best interest. So we're trying to do a variety of things to make it safe as our emergency vehicles travel through town, on the interstate, wherever they're traveling. So again, we're trying to find a variety of solutions that tie them all together.
Chief, can you please tell us, aren't there some rules as far as the appropriate speed for a cruiser through town. I know that I spend a lot of time at the corner of Stone Road, and, you know, it's quick, but it doesn't seem excessive. I heard somebody say 60 or 70 miles per hour. What parameters do we have for the officers as they go through that center of town?
The Ohio Revised Code says for emergency vehicles that are in response, they're exempt from speed limits and from traffic control devices, provided that the operator exercises what's called due regard for safety. So there's no set speed limit, no number, but they have to operate the vehicle safely. They can't fly down there at 90 miles an hour. That wouldn't be safe. But they could exceed the speed limit as long as they're taking care to watch out for cross traffic and, you know, approaching intersections carefully and all the things that we train our officers to do. Training's a bigger part of that, I think, than the actual limitations. All of our officers have been through the emergency vehicle operation course that a company called Drive Team puts on, and all of our supervisors have been through the Drive Team supervision course. That teaches them not only the laws, but it also teaches them about vehicle dynamics, and there's a driving component where they go out with a driving instructor and teaches them how the police vehicles react differently at different speeds.
I was going to ask a question. In Brecksville, they have a new police station. Was there an old police station in City Hall?
Yes.
Similar to ours.
When we do this study, Mayor, I'd like to see it all encompassing. If we're going to invest a lot of money in technology and get our main station, but I'd like to see if there's options. You know, as far as City Hall goes, we could always probably use more room for city offices, maybe have a police station more centrally located. And do what Brexit did. So I think before we invest the money, let's do a all-encompassing to see if there's, you know, if there's a better brand. And instead of having two or three different buildings where we house the police, I'd rather, you know, concentrate on having the best equipment and having the most manpower. So I'd suggest that to look, I mean, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Brexit's highly successful with what they did. Let's take a look and see if we should do something similar to what they did. Of course, it's a little different. They don't have a rockside road, but they're getting they're going to have an area down eventually at Miller and Brexville Road that down the road is going to be very important. So,
they may end up doing something in that area for their safety forces because of the length of time it'll take to get there from their existing station. I think they're, in that case, they may be 5 or 10 years behind because it's kind of developed. But once it develops, it's going to take on a life of its own, just like Rockside took on a life of its own.
Yeah. So we have, because we have a finite amount of money, we should invest it wisely and make sure that you know, Rockside Road is, it's more mature in development. We don't know what's going to be the effect of the pandemic. Hopefully, it'll still be vibrant and have a lot of office. But we, you know, I'd like to encompass maybe also that when we do invest this money, we invest it in the best possible way for our police department, for the safety of our residents, and the safety of our visitors here on Rockside.
Well, we're looking at a long-term strategy, so that should fulfill your concerns.
Sure.
And I appreciate that, which, again, that's consistent with the other thing, the economic development, and making sure that we prepare ourselves for downturns, for changes in our business or model, and so we're working hard at trying to reinvent ourselves there too. Because look, you can't stay the same. Things are changing all the time, and this year is clearly an indicator of that. So we're moving through a lot of different dynamics, trying to come up with the best options today, but with a long-term poke at things.
But short term, I think it's a manpower issue, like Kathleen mentioned too. I think
manpower, like the chief said, though, that's not just a matter of hiring a body. There's training. There's all the different culture orientation. There's a equipment, supporting equipment. So, but yeah, we're moving in that direction, but we're doing it methodically. And like the chief said, we want to hire the best people possible, not just anybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, well, consistent with that, this hiring new people probably will take a 2 or 3 layer approach. So we'll hire some people now, and in the near future, we'll look at the near future. We'll look at some of the retirees coming out, so we have some overlap. So we don't diminish our number, but we're able to plan based on some unknowns, as the chief indicated, with respect to drop program. We don't really know. We have ideas, but so we almost have to plan and prepare in anticipation of some of these changes that are going to take place in the next year or so.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Tim.
We're going to keep moving on here, so let's go to number six, discussion of roles and partnership with the federal, state, county governments, and mutual aid. Chief?
Yes, my notes here. We currently have mutual aid agreements with all the surrounding agencies. We have a blanket mutual aid agreement with all the SEV agencies. We just completed one last year with the National Park Service. The biggest asset for the coordination of the mutual aid agencies has been centralized dispatch. With all the surrounding communities now being dispatched in the same location, it really integrates it well. Also, all of the cruisers are equipped with GPS, so dispatch can see which cruisers are closer. One of the incidents the other night when Seven Hills was dealing with an in-progress auto theft, dispatch was able to look at it and determine that there were actually two Independence cruisers that were closer than the backup Seven Hills unit, and we were able to get the mutual aid requested and shot through. So, you know, Officer Sedlock was one of the first ones to respond to that. He actually ended up pursuing the suspect vehicle out of the city. So, you know, that's what we're doing to coordinate our efforts. We're also on a, you know, it's a layered effort with intelligence resources. We're using the county's fusion center, and we're also dealing with the crime control group that's run out of the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office. This is an investigation tool where they share resources and they disseminate information and they request information. Our detectives have used this to great effect to identify suspects, to put complicated cases together, multi-jurisdictional cases. It was the same person that committed a robbery both at our Shell station and at the Sunoco station on Rockside. He also committed 17 other robberies in Cuyahoga County in about at least 8 or 9 different cities. He had Cleveland, he had Parma, he had Strongsville, he had Rocky River. Through this group, we were able to share resources and put the pieces of each of our investigations together, identify the suspect, and they just indicted him. He's currently in custody in the county jail, but they indicted him on about 24 counts of armed robbery with firearm specifications. So these are the sort of things that we're putting together. And we're using, you know, each other's resources. It's especially valuable when these idiots decide to hit one of our cities. Neighbor sees them, somebody driving by sees them, they put the call out. It's not just the two or three officers that are on duty in Brooklyn Heights or on duty in Valley View or wherever it occurs. All of a sudden, you've got triple or quadruple that manpower that's coming in from other cities to set up perimeters and help chase suspects down. We just assisted Broadview Heights. They had a traffic stop. These two kids threw guns out the windows and took off, bailed out of the car, the Wallings Road area off of 77, ran into the woods on foot. We're able to send some officers up there to set up perimeter, and Officer Vitron and his canine was able to go up there and help locate the suspects. So, you know, that's how the mutual aid's working. And our federal partners, we're still working very closely with HIDA, with the Human Trafficking Task Force. The Marshals Northern Ohio Fugitive Task Force has assisted us on several occasions with some wanted suspects. So the change blatant support is really helpful.
You want to share also that we also, through our SWAT team, and we share our resources with other different layers of government.
Oh, absolutely. Through SAB, we have a SWAT team and a crowd control unit, and our officers, we have officers assigned to both those units. They responded to the riots in Cleveland. Our SWAT team has done numerous barricaded suspects in other cities. They've done high-risk armed drug raids in other cities. You know, and this is our contribution to other cities, but those are like an insurance policy. None of us want to file a claim with our auto insurance policy, but boy, if somebody, you know, hits you and they don't have insurance, you're darn glad you have it. If one of those horrible events were to happen here, we would have those resources immediately available to us.
If I could just touch on one more thing, Chief, is the dispatch center. How has that been working for us, not being located in town? Because I've heard firsthand some things that probably shouldn't have happened, or they didn't handle it the right way. And I just wondered if we're tracking, you know, response times through the new dispatch center and how that's working on a big overall basis.
Yes, you have to look at it on an overall basis, because like, you know, even when our dispatch was in-house, they made mistakes. There were some delays, but those were aberrations as opposed to, if you look at the overall, our response times have either stayed the same or improved depending on the category. With large scales, it's actually improved our response times. The actual operation of the dispatch, it's absolutely no different than when it was in our own building. You're talking to many times the same dispatchers. They're just sitting in a seat somewhere else. The technology is upgraded. We didn't have the GPS mapping there. We didn't have some of the predictive software. And the manpower and staffing. When Broadview Heights had that incident with the armed people the other day, if that were to happen here under our old system, we would only have two dispatchers working, and that's for police, fire, and EMS. You know, there they've got 6 to 8 dispatchers working, so they were able to assign one dispatcher just to handle that call, and then another dispatcher to handle all the other calls, and then another dispatcher to handle the fire and EMS calls. And they have that flexibility because all 10 cities in the dispatch center aren't going to be busy at the same time. So if there's a cluster of calls going on in Independence, they can shift their staffing to handle those calls. You know, and if it's quiet in Brooklyn Heights or it's quiet in Valley View, they don't need as much dispatch resources for that. So overall, it's been, you know, and not only is it was a necessary or required change because the state is limiting the number of public safety answering points or 911s. And we were the second lowest call volume 911 center in Cuyahoga County. They made it very clear to us that we were on the chopping block. They weren't going to support our 911 services anymore.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on that too. On the fire side, the dispatch center has been outstanding. When you talk about trying to coordinate responses from upwards to 8 different departments, Independence is right in the middle of that whole group. So when we have a fire here, it's one push of the button to activate, you know, multiple cities. In the past, it was you would have to call each dispatch center individually to get those resources. So that's a lot of calls. It's a lot of waste of time. When a call goes down now, it alerts our station individually. And it goes right in and notifies the guys, and it happens immediately. So they've done an outstanding job. The other thing that they've done a great job on is when we have an issue, either a technical issue with the dispatch councils or something, or the CAD system, they work tirelessly to correct those issues and make sure that it's as efficient as it can be. So I can't say enough for Nick DeCicco and the CBD group there and what they've done for us.
Yes, Dale.
Sounds like we have a lot of good things going on as far as response time and otherwise, but I know that one of the reasons, beside the fact that it was going to be required somewhere down the road, but there was some talk of cost savings. Do we have any idea if there was indeed cost savings? Do we have any, has there been enough time period to get a handle on the possible cost savings?
I don't think we've been through an entire budget cycle to be able to compare apples to apples. But you know, I know our budget for the dispatch was pretty significant compared to what the projected cost was for Chagrin Valley, but again, until you know we could actually look at the figures, I can't tell you what that difference is.
That'd be good to get those somewhere down the line when it's appropriate.
I know that those costs are shared across all communities, so I think this last time around it was a less of a rate increase due to COVID and everything like that, and they were very successful. But our key here is that we are with CBD, and they are one of the big players in the county. And when they talk about 911 money, which is getting to the point where that money might be coming available at some point, and CBD is positioned to really get some of that money because they are such a large PSAP. So I think it was the right move at the right time, and we've positioned ourselves real well for future, you know, cost savings.
Thank you.
You know, the other thing too about CBD, they do have a drone team that they can call and help us as well. They have other assets that they are bringing on board. I think a command center and some other mobile dispatch capability. These are some things that individually we just could not possibly do, and they're making those items available to us. Another thing that's coming online soon is radio maintenance and programming service, which is coming on in December. Our radios are technical, you know, gadgets nowadays. They need to be constantly tuned and adjusted to make sure they're working the best. We often have to pay a lot to do that for third-party vendors. CBD is offering that at a reasonable rate, and it's right in-house. They're available. That's another great asset that they're going to be providing to us here in the near future.
Thanks, Chief. So I have one question for the Chief from a David Reed. What is the best way for a new resident to build a healthy relationship with our police department?
Oh, give us a call. We'll be more than happy to come out and talk to you. That's one of the things, and that's one of the requirements that we that we require from our police officers. We want them to engage with the public. We want them to answer those questions and those concerns. So if it's something they have a question, hey, what's the best way to burglar-proof our house? Or, you know, what should I tell my kid about driving safety? Pre-COVID, we would give tours of the station to groups of kids, you know, to families that want to bring their kids up and look around. Absolutely. They can call, they can email, they can stop up and see us, even though that's not as practical now with all the protocols. But we're happy to hear from them. We're happy to talk to any of our residents.
If I may, Tom, you know, Chief, one thing that some of the communities do is, and I know we've done a couple of these open houses for like the volunteers, that's everything, you know, perhaps having some like chief's office hours where you come in, get a cup of coffee with the chief, maybe go to some of the neighborhood groups, you know, to let them know we got a lot of HOAs in town. It might make some sense just to give some people the tips. I mean, I was surprised just by, you know, following your lead and suggesting that people lock their cars and not leave valuables in the cars. I got all sorts of people thinking I was some law enforcement genius. You know, all I do is listen to Chief Kilbane and Mayor Kurtz, which I always try to do. But, you know, the reality of it is it was really beneficial. And sometimes common sense is an uncommon virtue, quite honestly. And, you know, we forget some of these tips. So, you know, my dad used to lock our car door in the garage, which was locked. So he was a suspicious human being.
Well, he didn't want you to steal it. That's why.
Yeah. It might have been internal or external theft, right? I don't know. But with my friends, Mayor, as you know, you saw. it might be a good idea to get you out and get some of our officers out, you know, and maybe do a little of those community service nights where we might be able to have a real good, honest conversation in the neighborhoods, and people might have a different approach, particularly in some of our newer sections, but also in our traditional sections as well. If we put together a little bit of plan for that over the course of a couple of months, do a series of neighborhoods, I think that would be beneficial for the department and could give them some tips to dispel some of these rumors. I mean, Tom and I get some of the same emails and text messages and Facebook questions from some of the same suspects, but, you know, it might be able to alleviate some of the concerns, but also make you aware of things that they're noticing that they may not talk about. So I just thought maybe that kind of a dialogue might be beneficial.
Oh, absolutely, and I know we've done that. We've had open houses usually in the summer. Obviously, this summer we skipped it, but alongside our VIPs, and you know, we'll have the officers go there. We'll do a canine demonstration. We'll have them talk to the SWAT officers. We'll have a detective there to explain what they do. Last year too, we also participated in coffee with a cop at Starbucks on a number of different occasions, and you know, a couple of them, I went down there with some of the officers. We'd sit down with, you know, some of the residents, some of the folks from the businesses. That's exactly the sort of community engagement that we, and if you hear of any of these HOAs or any of your constituents that want us, we're a phone call away. If I can't do it myself, I will make sure somebody from the department's there. I mean, the residents are too important for us to ignore on stuff like that.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, Mayor.
I just say, maybe perhaps being proactive about it, scheduling, say, hey, we're going to be at Dalebrook Estates and such a date, and we want to have a little, you know, get together, a coffee clutch at someone's home or something like that. That might be the type of thing I'm thinking of.
You know what, when we create this, find out what the new normal is going to be like, absolutely we can do those things. Right now, people are more hunkered down, and they're just, they're a little more reticent to hesitate to want to be part of a community event right now. So we'll be respectful of that. But after this, we get through this, absolutely, that's one of our goals. As a matter of fact, Chief, while I have you, I'm going to send you David Reed's number so you can call him. He wants to talk to you about a couple things.
Absolutely, Mayor.
All right, thanks, everybody. And the last thing on the agenda is the 2021 capital discussion. So tell us what you need, Chief.
Money, money, money.
We don't have any money, but tell us what you need.
Oh, more cops and helicopters and drones. And I think the big purchase is, I know we deferred the purchase of vehicles last year. I wanted to wait until Ford got a year to work the kinks out under their new model of police interceptors. So that's the major purchase for this year. Everything else we've got planned out in the future for vest replacements, weapon replacements, range refurbishment. Well, none of that's coming up on the schedule for 21. We've got, you know, money set aside each year, so when it does roll around on the schedule, we'll have the funds there available. I sat down with finance, we went over it, and there weren't a whole lot of tweaks that needed to be made in it. One of the things we, you know, will need to revisit when we look at this facility on Rockside Road, I would like to, you know, take a good hard look at increasing staffing to dedicate staff there. I envision the possibility of maybe initiating an extra shift, a swing shift, if you would, where we'll target the hotspot hours out of that Rockside Road facility and use that to really, you know, concentrate our efforts, do it all hands on deck, you know, in addition to what we're doing already. I think that would really, you know, go a long way to sending that message that, hey, that stuff doesn't happen here if, you know, you're not going to be able to commit a crime without tripping over one of my cops.
I like that.
I like that's the best thing I heard all my life.
I like that. Did you make that up, Chief?
Just off the cuff.
Nice.
Chief Riga, anything from on your side?
Yeah, I've looked at it with finance, and we've identified some vehicles in the future that we put into the five-year plan that would need to be replaced that are approaching 8 to 10 years old, some of our chase vehicles. SCBAs, obviously, you know how I work. I try to go after grants where I can, but I want to make sure the money's available if we need it. So looking down the road, SCBAs might be an item that we need to look at. Our current ones are only 3 years old, but they tend to go out of date after 10 years or three cycles of changes with NFPA. So these are some items that I've identified. Portable radios, our current radios are 3 years old, but they're expensive, and they, you know, I'd like to put a little money away for that for replacement in probably another 7 to 8 years. So those are some big ticket items. The other one that I'm looking at is we've been saving for a ladder truck. I'm waiting to get our new vehicle back. We currently have our 1997 Pierce being refurbished. Everything seems to be going pretty well with that. I'd like to possibly look at maybe refurbishing our ladder truck. It is a very good truck. We just had it tested last Friday, and it seems to be holding up pretty well. We have a few things we need to look at, but nothing major. But the value in the truck is the chassis and transmission. This particular truck's in really good shape. It might behoove us to, you know, look at some of the monies that we already have saved and maybe send it in for a refurbishment and try to get another 15 to 20 years out of it now instead of paying perhaps up towards the $1.5 billion for a new one in another 5 or 6 years. So I'm going to sit with Pierce when we're up there looking at our new truck and run that idea behind him and see what they can do with this truck that we currently have and see how they can bring it up to current standards in terms of what, you know, electronics and LED and all those other things that they can do with it. So again, it's very much a research project at this point, but it might be a good option for us and a cost savings down the road.
And how many years is that going to be out?
Currently, the ladder truck is a 2002, so it's about 18 years, but you know, the truck's in really good shape. We've been taking care of it all along. It's got less hours than the engine and transmission have for less hours than we did in the engine that we sent in. So we also, you know, we save a little bit on maintenance in the future because those engines, the engine and transmission, you know, they're not, they don't have the DEF fluid and emissions issues on them like current ones do that we're having problems with. I will also probably be approaching council in January or February on ordering a new squad. The build time on those are about 10 or 11 months. So while we're not due for one until 2022, I would like to probably put that order in you know, first of the year. That way we can save on any increases that may happen with Braun. We're not looking to redesign that vehicle. We like the models that we have right now. So I just want to kind of get in there and get ahead of any increases, try to save some money on that as well.
And how are those paid for, Chief? Is that paid for up front or when
they're usually paid for on delivery, but they can, even if it gets done a little bit early, they can hold delivery until 2022 in order to get the additional funding that would come in that year.
And that's already on the five-year capital plan?
Yes, that's already identified in the five-year capital plan. So those are probably the two big items. I do have a couple items on the miscellaneous things at the end of the meeting.
Well, we're approaching that, so go ahead. You got the
okay. I've been talking with HR and the mayor about part-time wages. I was putting together an option for currently our part-time firefighters are covered under an ordinance that's from 2011. So that ordinance doesn't get adjusted too often with the wage range for them. I'm looking to move the category of firefighter into what was changed this year. It's ordinance 2020-21 outlined a wage schedule for non-exempt, non-bargaining members. I'd like to add them to that level three in that particular ordinance, and that would allow them to be in a position where, you know, when the city decides to provide increases in that ordinance or changes, they would not be excluded by being in a different ordinance. So for pay range purposes or wages, I'd like to make that adjustment. And I sent that over to the law department for review. He believes that can happen. Some other benefits that the part-timers have will not be able to be adjusted by just making that change, but at a later date, we could look at that older ordinance and how we can make adjustments there. I think HR has some plans to make some adjustments in it, but she wasn't ready for that. But we are approaching the max level of pay range for the part-timers. And along with that, I would provide a chart showing some of the regional departments around us and what their pay rates are for part-time and the reasons for wanting to seek that change.
And I'm sure that's going to be a discussion that all the council is going to want to have with the mayor and HR and the finance director.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be.
Well, in terms of, we're going to prepare legislation to address this issue, and then you can determine, council can determine how they want to navigate through it.
Fair enough.
And then the other item is, last safety committee meeting, I brought up the Lexapol company that provides policies and procedures, and I think we provided some additional information on them. I talked it over with the mayor, and this would be like a long-term agreement to get into, which I, at this point, I think I'd like to approach this as getting a one-year agreement to move forward with them and see how it fits with us. There are different levels that we still have to work our way up to with Lexapol, different modules, if you will. So I'd like to get the first couple modules and see how it works for us. And if it's going to work great, I would present council with a long-term agreement to continue that relationship with Lexapol. Instead of just right off the bat entering into a full, you know, agreement to get to all five levels and then an annual fee. So I think that's kind of the way we wanted to approach it when I was talking to the mayor.
We just determined that, Mr. Chairman and members of council, we determined that let's see how this works with a couple modules. And once we're convinced it's a good strategy and it keeps us in sync with what's going on with today's rules, laws, et cetera, that we could then come back with the comprehensive package if needed.
Is that going to be in the packet for this next week?
Do we need legislation for that, Chief?
No, we will not need legislation for this first part. No, it's under $15,000. They are a professional service. It's a sole source setup. But if, you know, we decide to move forward with it the following year, we definitely put together the whole package as far as where we're going and what it will cost on an annual basis.
So is there Mr. Chairman, is there anybody that objects to us doing this first phase approach to this to see how well it fits into our needs? And then we could, down the road, if it's something that we need to make more comprehensive, that we'll come back to council?
I have no disagreements. I know Chief Rieger went through it very detailed last safety committee meeting, so I understand it. If it makes our force better and nothing falls through the cracks, I'm all for it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a couple, if we're done, I'd like to just review a couple things.
I've got a couple more things, Mayor.
Go ahead.
For police chief, I've had a video going around town of, I don't even know who the officer is, but was driving a cart with eighth grade students on it and hit a fire hydrant. And my question is that, was that ever brought up to anybody? Did anything happen with that? I know my son fell on the playground today. I got 4 phone calls. My son was on that cart, and we never got a call. If I wouldn't have seen the video, I'd have never known it happened. So I'm just trying to get, you know, my bearings around this. Is, you know, does anybody follow up on accidents like that? Was anybody called? Was anybody notified? You know,
Mr. Chairman, the chief and I have had conversation about that. Chief, if you want to elaborate, go ahead. But I think that we're finding a strategy that can make sure that there's good communication between the school and the city and the part, anybody that's involved.
Yes, that's it's been addressed through our, you know, it's being handled as an internal personnel matter. I don't think it's really appropriate to discuss the details of a personnel matter in an open meeting, but we have addressed it, and we're working to identify any potential deficiencies and making sure that that's a care corrected.
I guess I wasn't trying to dig. I just, my son was involved in it, so I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, I would have liked to have received a phone call, at least telling me what happened and that, you know, everything was okay, nobody got hurt, and so on and so forth. You know, so I was just throwing it out there just to make sure you guys were aware of it. I had no idea that anybody was aware.
No, we are aware of it. We're addressing it, and I'll be better because of it.
Okay. That's all I had, Mayor. So if you have some other...
Yeah, I just want to recap, if you could, just a couple things. We'll have legislation for the cameras on the next agenda. We're going to, the city's going to look throughout the business community to see what properties and business owners need to do a better job of lighting their parking lots. The facilities we've talked about, the remote facility and the main station, we'll continue to get more information from our personnel, but we'll take a long-term approach and look at investing monies into a long-term strategy before we just present a piecemeal approach to council. We will also update council, and the chief will relay information as soon as possible whenever an incident or situation occurs. We'll do that on a timely basis. When I get information, then we'll immediately get information to council so that there's better communication and you're aware of what's going on. Fire personnel, there'll be legislation on the agenda for that, for the part-timers. And that we'll do the Lexapola internally for the first couple of criteria. And once we determine it's good, we'll approach council for a more comprehensive approach. I'm not sure if I missed anything. The number of policemen, we're going to continue to look at hiring and watching our budget, but also that for the finance director. We'll watch our budget, but we'll also be making sure that we don't have large gaps when the drop program kicks in.
And just one more thing, the visual impact of police cars or police presence on Rockside Road until we come up with a different, you know, facility somewhere. But I think that extra visual effect would help us on Rockside Road.
Well, I can tell you, driving on Rockside Woods North last Saturday night, when I got to Topgolf and I saw a cruiser in the medium perpendicular to the road and you saw police, it definitely gets your attention. So
absolutely,
we may use a strategy where when we get these new vehicles, if the other ones aren't retired, we may use them as a strategy, part of our strategy. So we'll keep the safety committee and council abreast of what's going on as long as we get approval for the units.
Thank you.
Person Narduzzi?
Yes, Councilperson Kapusta.
Related to Chief Riga's comments about his budget, I just wanted to congratulate him on being acknowledged by the mayor for his budget preparation process and the comprehensiveness of it. I remember from when I was still an employee with the city. You set the bar pretty high there, Chief. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
Nice job, Chief.
Again, nice job, Chief.
Thank you.
Any other matters?
I think Chief Cobain feels left out. Great job with all your work today, Chief.
That's what you pay me for.
Was on the hot seat again. Well, if there's no other matters, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, members of council.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Eric.
And by the way, just one more thing. The finance director did give the chief, fire chief, Riga, an award for the way he presents his information as an example for everyone else. So just want to throw that out there.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. Good night, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Night. Go vote, Chris.
I'm going right now. That's one.